Paxton City Council. $29 million in upgrades eyed at city sewer plant. Project would require loan, increase in water and sewer bills. Hello, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, July 5th, 2026. We begin on the front page, big headlines, Paxton Dairy Queen, end of an era. After 72 years, Dairy Queen changes its name to Dairy Dream. Paxton. To some, the roadside ice cream shop at 349 North Railroad Avenue in Paxton will always be known as Dairy Queen, just as it had been since 1954. The name change happened there Saturday, August 1st. Will not change that sentiment. While the old Dairy Queen is now officially called Dairy Dream, little else is changing, co-owner and manager Ray Umble said, as the business is still serving soft-serve ice cream, just without Dairy Queen product, under a very similar menu with the same hours and staff. Umble hopes that will mean no change in customer loyalty, too. Just online, we've gotten a lot of support, said Umble, who owned the Dairy Queen since 2011 with his wife Erin and managed it since 2004. People say, we'll still come there. We're glad you're not closing. There was no interruption in business, actually, not even for a day, as preparation work was completed ahead of Saturday's switch to allow for a seamless and immediate transition. This included the repainting of the building's original Dairy Queen sign by Paxton resident Nate Grice, along with the repainting of the rest of the building with a modified red, white, and black color scheme and the addition of cow-themed marketing signage to its walls. The move came with a mix of emotions for Umble and his wife. I think we're a little sad because we've been in the building for 22 years doing this, Umble said Wednesday, July 29th, and it's a little scary because now it's like, okay, it's all on us to make it a success. In explaining what led to the change, Umble said he and his wife recently signed an intent to sell their Dairy Queen franchise territory rights to another existing franchise owner. Umble said the closing of the sale is expected in September. In the meantime, Umble said he was not permitted to discuss whether the sale of the territory rights would make way for a new Dairy Queen rumored to be opening this fall across town by the Interstate 57 interchange in the city's tax increment financing district. An undisclosed fast food restaurant of a national brand has been under construction at the former Paxton Auto Laundry and Lube Center property at 580 South Cherry Street, plus two other parcels behind it at 552 and 560 South Cherry Street since last spring, as part of a development that will also include a convenience store and a fuel station. The developers, a company called Paxton Commercial Investment Group, LLC, that is headed by Harash Patel of Monticello, who also owns the Subway restaurant in Paxton, have said an announcement about the restaurant will be made well ahead of its anticipated November 30th completion. When asked in June whether a new DQ was being built in Paxton, a Dairy Queen spokesman said via email, "It is premature to share info at this time. Feel free to check back in 6 months." On Friday, the same spokesman said, "It is premature to share details about any proposed location in this area at this time." Even before the Umbles were approached about potentially selling their territory contract, the Umbles had been considering going independent, that is, ending their relationship with Dairy Queen, once the contract was to expire in September of 2027. Such conversations started back in 2024 after Dairy Queen's corporate office informed the Umbles, in addition to other Dairy Queen owners in the area, that they would need to complete various cosmetic upgrades at their own expense to maintain their Dairy Queen contract. The estimated cost was $170,000 or more, Humble said. We were just like, you know what? We don't want to do all this stuff. Can't we just ride out our contract and then go independent? Humble recalled. And they said, yeah, you can do that. Not long after that, though, the Humbles were approached by the interested buyers. They said, hey, do you want to sell your Dairy Queen? Humble recalled. And we were just like, okay, is this a coincidence? Initially, they offered to buy the Dairy Queen contract and property outright. What they wanted to do at the time, I believe, is they were going to knock this building down and build a new one, Humble said, even though they agreed to different terms. Basically, they want the Dairy Queen contract that we have, nothing else, just the contract, so that they can go to Dairy Queen and say, okay, we bought the contract from Ray and Aaron, now this is what we have planned to do. And then they can go and get approved, Humble said. The sale of the territory contract means the Humbles will no longer have control over a 5-mile radius territory where their permission is required for any other Dairy Queens to open. There's no non-compete agreement in the contract, though, Humble noted. So once we sell the contract, we can continue selling ice cream, but we cannot sell Dairy Queen product. As Dairy Dream, not Dairy Queen, there will be some things on the past menu that we can't have, Humble said. Comparable items will be available, though, just under different names. Blizzards, for example, will be called mixers. The recipes are going to be mostly the same, but they can't be exactly the same because those are Dairy Queen's proprietary products, which we don't have, Humble said. So it will basically be the same with different names. And the cups are going to look different. Humble said the menu will be expanding, too. We're expanding a lot of stuff, Humble said. We're going to have chocolate cake shakes. We're going to have more flavors for Sunday toppings, shake flavors. Dairy Dream's vanilla and chocolate ice cream is a little bit richer than Dairy Queen's, Humble noted. Before selecting the new ice cream mixture, Humble said that he and his wife sampled ice cream at other establishments across the state that use it too. People can sample it for free on Wednesday, August 5th, when Dairy Dream hosts a free cone day. There are other Dairy Dreams in Illinois, including one in Libertyville in the Chicago suburbs, but none is affiliated with this new one in Paxton, Humble noted. Similarly, though, they're all mom-and-pop shops. The 57-year-old Humble, a native of the northwest Chicago suburb of Round Lake, and his wife of 33 years, a native of Long Beach, California, had owned the Paxton Dairy Queen since 2011, although he had been managing it and she had worked there, too, since 2004. For most of 2004, he worked as an internship under then-owner Vern Dreher, learning the ropes to run the business. Dreher, a resident of suburban Barrington, bought the Dairy Queen in Paxton in 2004 and owned it for nearly a year before selling it in 2005 to Humble's father-in-law, Richard Roman, who 6 years later sold it to the Humbles. The Dairy Queen's original owner was Milo Faulkner. Since Faulkner opened it in 1954, it has changed owners multiple times, Humble said. When one of its short-term owners sold it to Dreher in 2004, he really had no one to run it, Humble said. Humble, meanwhile, was looking for work. At that time, I was looking for a new career, said Humble, a former computer and insurance salesman who was living in Buckley at the time, after previously having lived in the Chicago area. Humble's father-in-law, a banker in suburban Elmhurst, helped get the two connected. Vern was one of his customers, Humble said, of Dreher, the owner of the numerous Dairy Queens. As a commercial banker, Richard would loan Vern money to buy his Dairy Queens. Blair soon offered the Dairy Queen management job to Umble, who had been an ice cream scooper in his college cafeteria while attending Northwestern University in Evanston, where he majored in psychology, but otherwise lacked any experience running an ice cream shop. He says, "I'll show you how to do it. It's easy," Umble recalled. So he showed me the business, and I thought, okay, I'll do this while I'm waiting for another job to open up, and then get out. And then he showed me how you actually run the business, and you know how much profit the business does and all of that. And I was like, oh, this is a pretty nice business. I think maybe I'll just stick doing this. Months into Umble's new job, his father-in-law bought the business from Dreher, joining Umble there to work a few times a week. Richard, he was pretty much at the end of his career in banking, and he always wanted to own his own business, Umble said. This gave him something to do, a little money, and all that. It probably wasn't what he expected. It's a lot of work, and it's a lot of running around, especially for a 70-year-old man who was not exactly used to that kind of thing. He still lived up in Libertyville, and he would come down to Paxton for 3 days a week and then go back to Libertyville, probably to rest, and then I and Aaron would be in here the rest of the time. Since 2011, when the Umbles purchased the business from Roman, they changed little about it. "This is the original sign, original building," Umble said last week. "The only thing that's not original is the breezeway, which was added to the front because of the traffic on Railroad Avenue. You couldn't hear the customers without it. Plus, it's a safety thing." The Dairy Queen's menu was always limited to ice cream products, except for a time when it had a limited food menu, too, that included hot dogs, chili dogs, and nachos, for example. That was up until Vern took over, Umble said. The new Dairy Dream is open from 2 to 9 p.m. until September, when its hours are reduced to 2 to 8 p.m. through the end of the year. Like the old Dairy Queen, the business will be temporarily closed for about 7 weeks each year, beginning the first day of winter through Super Bowl Sunday. Back on the front page, we have from the Paxton City Council, $29 million in upgrades eyed at city sewer plant. Project would require a loan and an increase in water and sewer bills. Paxton. Paxton's aging wastewater treatment plant on Pitt Road, just south of the town, could see nearly $30 million in upgrades, and its residents could see a resulting increase in their bi-monthly water and sewer bills, too. Members of the City Council's Public Works Committee met at City Hall on Tuesday, July 28th, to discuss the proposed project, which was recommended from among three options proposed by the Clark Dietz engineering firm to increase the plant's maxed out hydraulic capacity and replace equipment that engineers said is already at or beyond its useful life. The four-member committee, chaired by Alderman Justin Withers and also comprised of Alderman Eric Evans, Kristen Larson, and Rob Pacey, voted unanimously to recommend the full council's approval of moving forward with Clark Dietz's submittal of a proposed facility plan to the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency in preparation for applying for a low-interest loan. The eight-member council is expected to take its own vote during the next meeting at 7 p.m. Tuesday, August 11th. The project would have implications for the city's water and sewer customers, who would see an increase in their bills to help pay off the loan. The project's estimated cost is about $29 million, which includes both construction and costs and design and construction and engineering costs, according to engineer Andrea Brettle, the Central Illinois Area Manager for Clark Dietz's civil environmental team. Brettle suggested phasing in a water sewer increase well before construction would start to help avoid a larger increase later on and ease the financial strain on Paxton residents. Under a best-case scenario, construction would be complete as early as June 2030, Prettl said. That scenario assumes the facility plan would be submitted within the next month, followed by the submittal of engineering plans and project specifications to the IEPA next year, and then the submittal of a loan application to the IEPA sometime around September of 2028. If the targeted construction timeline is achieved, the city would be required to start paying off its state revolving loan fund in January 2031, Prettl said. She advised not waiting until then, though, for the city to build up the funds it will need to pay off the loan. You have time to increase your sewer rates incrementally, as opposed to shocking the system by doubling it all at once. Prettl said the city should annually be raising its water and sewer rates by 3-4% to keep up with rising maintenance costs, but this is going to be above that amount. Without a phased-in rate increase, the project could result in the doubling of your annual user fee from $5 per thousand gallons to $10.60 per thousand gallons, Prettl told the alderman. It probably makes sense to do a dollar increase per year for the next 5 years. Prettl noted that the submittal of the facility plan, which was reviewed by aldermen during the meeting and is pretty much ready to go, does not obligate the city to pursue the project as it is merely a preliminary step. Prettl said, it is apparent upgrades are needed to the wastewater treatment plant based on an analysis of the plant's existing conditions included in the facility plan. Michael Livermore, senior Illinois client advisor for Clark Dietz, said the last upgrades to the plants were done in the early 2000s. Most of the plant's mechanical equipment dates back several decades and is at or beyond its useful life, Livermore said, including its aeration basins built in the early 1980s and its non-functional filter building. In addition to its aging equipment, the facility has been operating at or above its hydraulic capacity for dry weather periods for some time now, Livermore said. Prettl said the plant's rated design flow for dry weather periods, as listed in the city's National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit, is about 500,000 gallons per day, a number that the city is maxing out, which is not good for your ability to add additional flow in the system. Prettl noted that the plant could be placed on a critical review status by the IEPA without capacity upgrades. Also, it could limit future development in the city, including a planned residential subdivision south of Ottawa Road by the Interstate 57 interchange. Three options were presented for the council's consideration. 1. Rehab the plant without expanding it. 2. Rehab the plant and also expand it with additional treatment units. And 3. Rehab the plant and build an on-site oxidation ditch. Prettl recommended option 3, and the four aldermen present appeared in favor of that option over the others. Pacey said he believes it makes the best use of the footprint already there. Oxidation ditches are a very common treatment method that operators really like because they are pretty low maintenance and pretty simple to operate, Prettl said. Under option 3, the plant's capacity would be increased to 950,000 gallons of flow per day. Livermore said the project would boost the plant's capacity to handle an additional 1,500 residents. Clark Dietz designed an oxidation ditch for nearby St. Joseph's new wastewater treatment plant that was built last year, Prettl said. Paxton Mayor Bill Ingold and Public Works staffer Jace Papel and Donnie Inman plan to visit the Champaign County Communities plant on Wednesday, July 29th, to see how it works. The project would also utilize as much of your existing infrastructure as possible, Prettl said, to avoid capital costs. That includes the plant's existing package plants, which would be converted to either clarifiers or sludge treatment, and see all the equipment inside of the structures upgraded. Brettel said the oxidation ditch would also allow the city to no longer require the use of the plant's blowers. All the moving parts are above the waters, and there's no blowers at all, Brettel said. So it is simpler. It's a different kind of system with much less equipment underneath the water. Brettel said it would be no more expensive to pursue an oxidation ditch than it would be to expand the package plants on site as proposed under the alternative option 2. That is not the only advantage, though, she said. I think it would be most cost-effective to go towards an oxidation ditch, Brettel said. But I think some of the advantages make that the preferred alternative, like not needing chemicals for phosphorus removal and etc. I would rather be able to achieve those water quality goals in the simplest way possible, which is biologically. Under the more complicated option 2, the number of package plants would be expanded from 2 to 3, and a chemical system would be added. The benefit of this would be that the operators already know how to operate the system, Brett said. The downside of having multiple package plants is that, all of a sudden, you're not operating one treatment system, you're operating 3, and it leads to a lot of complexity. Option 1, meanwhile, which would not expand the plant's capacity, would involve the replacement of a majority of the plant's aging equipment. Basically, we'd be, in short, touching every part of the existing plant as part of the recommended rehabilitation. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, August 6th. Mary L. Bricky, Gibson City. Mary L. Bricky, 93, died Monday, July 20th. At the Villas of Hollybrook in Gibson City. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at the time of publication. Retta J. Brinegar, Paxton. Retta J. Brinegar, 89, of Paxton, died at 5:07 p.m. Sunday, August 2nd, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services will be at 1 p.m. Saturday, August 8th, at Beyer Family Funeral Services in Paxton, with the Reverend Pat Allen officiating. Burial will follow in Glen Cemetery in Paxton. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday, August 8th, at the funeral home. Memorials may be made to the First United Methodist Church in Paxton, or St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Lisa B. Helgeson, Gibson City. A memorial service for Lisa B. Helgeson, 67, of Gibson City, who died Friday, July 17th, will be at 2 p.m. Sunday, August 16th at the Seventh-day Adventist Church in South Mattis Avenue in Champaign, followed by the serving of refreshments at the SDA Annex on West Bradley in Champaign. Brandy Montgomery, White Heath. Brandy L. Montgomery, 48, of White Heath, mother of a Paxton resident, died Saturday, July 25th. After a battle with stage 4 metastatic breast cancer. Funeral services were held Saturday, August 1st at the Trinity Community Fellowship Church in Farmer City. Memorial contributions may be made to the family. Gary L. Reitz, and that's spelled R-E-I-T-Z, Gibson City. Gary L. Reitz, 83, of Gibson City, died at 8:02 a.m. Thursday, July 30th, at Accolade Healthcare of Paxton on Pells. A memorial service will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, August 8th, at the American Evangelical Lutheran Church in Gibson City, with Maynard Berkey officiating. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday, August 8th, at the church. Memorials may be made to the Gibson Area Food Pantry or to an organization of the donor's choice. Francis Vaiciulus, Jr., and that is spelled V-A-I-C-I-U-L-I-S, Paxton. Francis Edward Frank Vaiciulus, Jr., 72, of Paxton, died on March 17th at his home. A private family funeral service will be held September 26th in Naperville. We return to the news with another story we've been following. Former Iroquois County Public Health Administrator, Shippert's October trial vacated. Postponement requested by prosecution with no objection from defense. Kankakee. Former Iroquois County Public Health Department Administrator Deanne Shippert's jury trial is no longer set for October. Charged in March 2024 with 33 felonies, including 8 counts of theft of government property by deception, 8 counts of forgery, and 17 counts of official misconduct, the 59-year-old Watsika woman appeared in a Kankakee County courtroom for a status hearing on Friday with her two Springfield attorneys, Mark Wyckoff Sr. and Daniel Fultz. According to online court records, Kankakee County Judge William Dickinson, who was reassigned the case after its filing last year in Iroquois County Circuit Court, granted an oral motion by prosecutors from the Illinois Attorney General's office to postpone Shippert's previously scheduled October 19th trial. There was no objection from the defense, court records showed. Dickinson also informed both parties that he had received subpoena material found relevant to the case, which was tendered to the state. Shippert is due back for a status hearing at 9:30 a.m. Thursday, September 24th. According to the charges, Shippert allegedly stole more than $100,000 from the health department between May 31, 2020 and July 15, 2022 by submitting fraudulent timesheets claiming hours she did not work, including overtime and back pay she never earned. She also allegedly made false representation to the Board of Health to obtain its approval to receive pay for 179 hours of overtime and fraudulently used grant funds from a grant for COVID-19 contact tracing to pay for her overtime. According to prosecutors, over a 20-month span during the COVID-19 pandemic, Shippert spent at least 759 hours at a Watsika gambling establishment, an average of almost 39 hours a month, while claiming to be working. And that's all the time we have for this week's reading of the Ford County Chronicle. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.